You are listening to CJN Speaks. This is the Cut Jib Newsletter Podcast, episode number 4. We are recording live on December 8th, on Wednesday. JJ Sefton here with CBD. Hello, sir.
How are you? It's a lovely cold and frigid day here in suburban New Jersey. I'm really thrilled. I love New Jersey.
Yes, you love it, except for the insane person and people that are running the damn state into the ground. But other than that, yes, it is the Garden State. Why not?
One of the insane gun control measures that's currently in the state legislature is maddening. It requires that guns be locked in a safe or the equivalent, and that the ammunition be locked in a different safe or equivalent.
So
for me to protect my home, I would have to ask the
just thinking the exact same
hold thing. On for 5 minutes while I unlock my safe and then unlock the other safe for the ammo, and then magazines can't be loaded, so the magazine has to be unloaded, so I have to load a magazine first.
Excuse me, do you guys mind waiting here in the living room? I'll make you some coffee and you can have some Danish. If you want, you can also rape my wife and my children while I load the magazine so I can come and confront you. But please, you know, feel free to anything you want. And if you need anything, just give me a shout. Unbelievable. That's insane. Just absolute. Just
it is. It's absolutely insane. But the state is insane. I look around and I see the amount of waste and the amount of corruption and the amount of legal machinations that we have to go through just to protect our rights, which unfortunately is a failing proposition in this state. And as I've said many times, I can't wait to get the hell out of here.
I'm bound for glory myself out of the wonderful land of New York City. I mean, amazing. Bill de Bolshevik is on the way out the door, and he institutes this vaccine mandate for every single business now. And I'm going, great, now you just, I mean, whatever business you didn't destroy, you will now completely crash the economy. And so far, I mean, everyone sort of pins their hopes on Eric Adams. The fact of the matter remains he is a Democrat, and he is, at the very least, a liberal, which is, you know, he's not a Maoist, so I don't think. But, I mean, I'm sort of waiting for this guy to sort of issue
Well, how can you tell the difference at this point?
Well, I mean, liberal to me is someone like, and we've talked about this, I think, is Ed Koch. Ed Koch was many things, but he couldn't have been insane enough to do this. Of course, we'll never know because he's not around and he's not the mayor under these circumstances. But, I mean, this is just total madness. So I'm waiting for Eric Adams to issue a press release that at the stroke of midnight on New Year's Day, 12:00 in 1 second, the executive order from Bill de Blasio is hereby negated and withdrawn. So far, he hasn't said anything. So I hold out no hopes for him. The other part of it is, even if he did want to reverse a lot of this insanity, but whether it's COVID or whether it's, you know, the defund the police insanity or the crime wave, even if he wanted to do that, he still has a city council that is hard, hard, hard left. So he has to deal with them. Well, again, I'm out of here next summer to Wisconsin. So I'm a happy boy.
I'm jealous. My wife has an employee in London who had planned a trip to New York City for Christmas with his two children and his wife. The trip included obviously spending a week in New York City hotels, one or two rooms. Let's see, two Knicks games and a Rangers game. I'm not sure exactly the teams. Yeah. And a couple of theater visits. Now, four people, meals, tickets, tchotchkes, transportation. That's a lot of money, I'm guessing. And since he makes a fair amount of money, I'm guessing that it's a $10,000 or $15,000 loss in New York City because he had to cancel, because his kids are not vaccinated and he's unwilling to vaccinate them, especially since England does not mandate it.
Amazing. I'm actually kind of shocked that they don't do that. But no, we have it now. You've got to, if you come into the state, you have to be shot. So it's just, this is, it's madness. It really is absolute madness. I can't
And of course, we talked about this in the last podcast, but the reality is that the Omicron variant is rapidly taking over from the Delta and the Alpha and whoever the hell else knows what's going on. And it's even more benign. And as far as we know, there have been zero deaths from the Omicron variant.
Worldwide, by the way, yes.
Worldwide, yes.
Nothing.
Sure they're frantically looking for deaths.
Well, but, believe me, if they can't find a death, they'll make a death.
They'll make one up, yeah.
Which is really, most of the statistics, I don't trust them. I don't trust these deaths. I mean, first of all, it's deaths from something as opposed to deaths with something. I mean, and we joke about it. If there's a 10-car pileup and 50 people are killed in a car accident, if someone is found with blood tests and they do an autopsy that he was infected with the virus, they're going to count that as a COVID death. So there you go. This is what we've been reduced to. So
and the reality is that these deaths are primarily in people with significant comorbidities, including obesity.
Yes.
You name it.
Yeah, your
COPD.
Immunocompromised. You're elderly. Yeah. These are the same people who are vulnerable to any kind of a respiratory virus to begin with, and that's what they die from.
Any medical examination of it would have discovered that, but it hasn't been medical in a very, very long time. This is a purely political issue, and it will continue to be a political issue. There is no relief in sight. They are going to continue this until the vast majority of America says enough. And I think that is coming, but it's not coming fast enough.
It is not coming fast enough, and it is for 2 years already. This is the greatest. Initially, it was, and it still is. And people are. It's a psychological weapon. The virus itself was basically, as viruses go, was not necessarily that big of a deal. And I don't mean to minimize the suffering and the death of people who actually had it and who actually got sick from it and who actually did die from it, or however you want to describe it. That's terrible. And let's not forget that many of those deaths were needless, because people like Andrew Cuomo, who I call the Angel of Death, among the other blue state governors, put sick people into nursing homes where you had elderly people who were not infected but were vulnerable, and essentially unleashed a biological warfare weapon on them and wiped out thousands of elderly people for whatever reason, to save on Medicare funds or to whatever. If I want to be ghoulish about it, but that's what they did, and that is the real shame. And we talk about what's his name, the younger Cuomo, Fredo, Chris, being fired because of sexual harassment allegations. Please, had nothing to do with that. It's all because Andrew Cuomo became a political liability because of COVID and because of other things. And now that he's gone, CNN doesn't need Chris Cuomo anymore, who's a complete inept and has no business being on the air. He has no business driving a cab. I don't know what he's qualified to do.
I think it's unfair that we call the younger Cuomo Fredo.
That's true.
I think it's unfair to his brother. I think his brother is just as stupid.
He is just as stupid. But,
By the way, his rationale for putting COVID patients back into the nursing homes and the group homes, I think, is disingenuous. And I think the real reason, obviously, is that he has significant financial connections to the nursing home to the hospital industry. And they paid him more than the nursing homes. So,
unbelievable. Unbelievable. It's literally. And he'll go unpunished. It's never good. These people will never be unpunished for all their crimes, and that's the real horrible.
You mentioned not trusting the data, and I was thinking about this earlier. The incompetence of the Biden administration. I don't trust anything that they say, but I think it is only in part because of politics. Yes, of course they're lying to us. Psaki is an unbelievable psycho when it comes to lying, and how she says it with a straight face is beyond me. Well, but it's coupled with incompetence. They are unbelievably lousy at what they do. They've hired a bunch of They've hired a bunch of idiots, and they're running the U.S. government into the ground. And let's face it, the U.S. government was never particularly efficient or competent. But compared to the Biden administration, Trump was a genius. Actually, not so far from the truth, because when you think about it, his foreign policy was superb. Job creation was great. Labor participation increased. Unfortunately, politically, he was naive. He was naive and far too trusting.
Well, that's it. His greatest weakness, his greatest strength was his greatest weakness, because he was an outsider. And as we had discussed many times, who could possibly fathom? As you can be as what's the word I'm looking for? You could be as cynical as you want about the nature of government and the nature of society and the nature of people. And we still grew up believing and trusting that things like police and the CIA and the FBI and the courts and the justice system, as flawed as especially that is, and those are, you still have people who were decent people and who would put aside their politics and would do the right thing, whatever the right thing would be, especially in times of the greatest danger to our society. And as we have been now proven beyond any reasonable doubt, all of that's out the window. They proved just the opposite. They proved that they're political animals and it's power for power's sake, and they threw out Donald Trump, and in essence, the millions of people who voted for him, who wanted a change and wanted the change of the trajectory that the country is going in, because it interfered with their plans and their ability to make a buck off of our destruction. So that's where we are, and that's why Trump ultimately failed. It's amazing what he accomplished, which is basically single-handedly did most of these things. And he had people all over the place stabbing him in the back. He had maybe a handful of loyalists with him, such as Mike Flynn, such as Peter Navarro, and maybe one or two other people. But everywhere he turned, even after getting rid of people and having people recommended to him, they stabbed him in the back. And it's horrible. Speaking of Peter Navarro, his book out now about how the whole COVID crisis unfolded in Trump's last year of his first term.
Yes.
And yes, how that unfolded. And he really goes behind the scenes. And it's truly alarming and enraging when you see what people like Steve Mnuchin did to him and a bunch of others in these meetings about totally screwing him over and bamboozling him about the nature of this disease and what should be done. Yeah, people complain about Donald Trump. Well, he should have known this. He should have known that. The guy was, I mean, as someone said, there was no Trump administration. There was only Trump. And so that's, you know, he was damned from the beginning. And again, miracle that he was able to accomplish what he did.
We do have to admit, though, that that was a significant failing.
Yes.
I see people like DeSantis, who is obviously much more capable politically than Donald Trump ever will be or ever was. That's why I am cautiously optimistic that he is going to stab us in the back and he will become president in 2024.
Yeah,
he is. Yeah, he is not naive when it comes to the deep state. He understands it. And as I mentioned in the last podcast, he is also far more intelligent, far more nimble than the sclerotic media that is going to be gunning for him.
Very true. Very true. So, but this also raises the question of, let's hereby establish that, okay, America as founded is dead and gone, except we still have these institutions such as the legislature and the judiciary and the bureaucracy still intact, and a political party that is out to, that wants to, if they can, enslave 200 million people, would rather kill them. How does someone, assuming that DeSantis wins the White House outright without the cheat, as well as we get majorities in both houses of Congress, now how do you begin to even reverse anything, or at least to stop the madness that's taking us over the cliff? I can't see how you do that. I can't see how you go forward. And I mean, ideally, if I had a magic wand, I would abolish the entire federal bureaucracy and institute term limits and do all these things that literally get the Ninth and Tenth Amendment back to where it's supposed to be. People talk about, and Mark Levin talks about a convention of states, you know, for the Article 5 convention. And I'm going, well, how do you do this when nobody is to be trusted and everybody's corrupt? And the minute you try to do something like that, you'll be squashed like a bug.
Article 5, I think, is horrendously difficult and extraordinarily dangerous. Just imagine the catastrophe that it could be if we're unlucky. I think that the Constitution needs to be respected without changing it. And someone like DeSantis, well, just recently in Florida, he eased the rules about reporting people who are ignoring the restrictions on vaccine mandates. So he made it easier for you and me to call the state and say, hey, I'm being told I can't work unless I get vaccinated. It's things like that that make me, as I said, cautiously optimistic about him.
Right.
Because he sees where he's going to get the biggest bang for his buck. And things like that really are fantastic.
We talk about institutions that have to change, but how do you change also the fact that you have a very large chunk of the population that does not recognize America as founded or the Constitution as legitimate and wants to destroy it and wants to destroy those of us who revere it? So there's that challenge of reversing course. And I'm assuming that will take, that's a generational thing, if God forbid it's not an actual armed civil war conflict kind of a thing where you actually defeat people in a violent in violent civil war, which I believe me, I'm not itching for. But again, it's how do you change hearts and minds
maybe it's as simple as economic change.
Could be.
Maybe a vibrant and more market-driven economy will gradually change people's hearts and minds. Our economy has not been a true market economy for 150 years. Shifting even slightly toward a more level playing field, and I believe that market economies are perfectly level. Maybe that will begin the sea change that we require. I don't know. I'm guessing.
There's so many different factors and balls in the air, and there's so much corruption, both from a spiritual and moral level on the individual, where these things, you know, are driven from ultimately, from the individual heart and mind, up until the very institutions that were put forth and now are so thoroughly corrupted that you can't trust them. I mean, can't trust a criminal justice system that throws people into jail just simply for protesting, like the January 6th protesters, which hopefully we'll talk about in a minute. And you can't trust people like Anthony Fauci, who just completely talks out of his backside when it comes to masks, no masks, three masks, four boosters, five boosters, forever boosters. How do you change that? So all these things are just a complete and total mess, starting from the individual who has no moral compass thanks to the lack of education and thanks to the destruction of the notion of religion or of a moral or an ethical basis for running one's life and dealing with interpersonal relationships to the very institutions that we trust with our lives. So there you go.
It's incredible. You know, we look at the educational system in the United States, and the lack of morality in it is a direct result of the lack of religion. I'm not suggesting that we have a state religion. I think that's a really bad idea, and so did a bunch of dead white men 240 years ago. But I think that there has to be a religious-based morality taught in this country for us to return to some semblance of a moral and ethical base from which we can create that second republic. Whether that's going to happen, again, I don't know. There are religious schools throughout the United States that teach that. I can't imagine that their enrollment is going down. Certainly the last 2 years has taught even low-information voters that schools are not their friends.
No.
But it's a huge leap to a moral and ethical society based on religious teaching.
Right. Even if it's not necessarily about religion per se, it's about, you know, we've had such a cultural rot, especially since the late 50s and into the 60s, where everything it's anything goes. It's moral relativism. It's all of these things where there's no actual truth. There's only your truth and my truth, and everybody has their own truth. So where you want to feed your own pleasures and your own desires to whatever insane level that takes you, regardless of the consequences on yourself and on society and on anybody else. That's what we've been teaching people for the last, you know, not just in schools, but in the culture and everywhere else. And woe to anybody who opposes that, lest they be called a racist, a sexist, a homophobe, a this phobe, a that phobe, and you name it. So there it is. There it is. All right, we'll take a little break, and we'll be back in about 2 minutes. This is the Cut Jib News Radio Network. And we're back, and just off the air, CBD was just, we were talking about the situation we had mentioned before in the previous segment about Trump's amazing triumphs, and especially in the field of foreign relations and foreign affairs. And CBD, we were talking obviously now Iran is back in the news, of course, with the restarting of the crazy peace process or the not the peace process, but the nuclear treaty, whatever that whole insanity.
the Brits and the French are proclaiming that it's not really going to work. We'll see what happens. What I found interesting is that had Iran remained a typical Muslim state and, you know, hated Israel and you know, tossed a few million bucks every year to the, you know, the terrorist group du jour, Israel would be isolated far more than it is now. But because of Iran's fixation on Israel and their unbelievable insanity in their desire to build bombs and destroy Israel, and then, of course, nuke Saudi Arabia, Israel has been, I don't know, revitalized by the Arab world, because they have to be realistic about Iran and they need allies. And Israel is absolutely the best ally they could have against Iran. So the mullahs have screwed this up perfectly for Israel. They are the reason why Israel has embassies in 15 or 20 Arab countries. It's just a wonderful, wonderful circumstance that they probably did not predict.
Cornerstone of that, of course, was the Abraham Accords that President Trump instituted. And you wouldn't know it by watching the regular media, but it was an absolute triumph. I mean, the whole thing with the peace process, like anything else, like any other bureaucracy, the raison d'etre of the peace process is to perpetuate the peace process, where no real peace or anything actually gets accomplished. And so he said, to hell with that. It's the Palestinians that are at fault here, and we are marginalizing them, and we are going ahead and we're going to foster relations between as many Arab and Muslim countries as we can, minus the Palestinian question. And lo and behold, boom, you had Morocco, you had the Emirates, you had Bahrain, and a couple of other countries, I think, that actually signed peace deals with Israel and set up embassies in Israel and exchanged embassies in the capitals, and are now cooperating on a whole panoply of issues, from security to environmental issues to other things. And that was the cornerstone of why this is happening, and why Iran is now sort of backed up. Well, it's not really backed up, but because of Biden, is now they're trying to resuscitate and sort of nix all that. But I think the cornerstone is so solid that I don't think the Iranians are going to be able to undo that process. The other
thing, it all flows from a very, very simple proposition on President Trump's part, and that is, it's somebody's fault. Let's be realistic, it's the Palestinians' fault. Now, is that fair? Yes, I think it is fair. But it's a simple way to short circuit the mess that is the peace process, that has been the peace process in the entire world since World War II. The last real peace process happened on the deck of the Missouri in, what was that, September 1945.
That was it.
That was real peace. Guess what, folks? It's your fault. And if you don't like it, we're going to keep bombing you.
That's really is the nature of war, and why all these wars that, again, that President Trump, insane military adventures that he put a stop to. He says, look, if you're gonna go to war, you have to have a goal at the end of this thing. The object of goal is to defeat an enemy and to inflict so much pain on them that they cry uncle, and you dictate your terms to them. This whole thing about winning hearts and minds and nation building that Clinton and Bush and all the others were guilty of, let's lay the blame, was insanity. And what did it cost us? It cost us trillions of dollars and thousands of American lives for nothing. So, you know, circling back to Iran and what's going on in the Middle East, is that Iran is an interesting case, because before the revolution that brought the Ayatollah to power, the Ayatollahs, it was a very Western and modern country. And so the people there, even now, it's a whole new generation that have never really known that have come up in the last, you know, 40 years. They do not want this. They are very much wanting to throw off this mollocracy and embrace freedom and embrace plurality. And yes, you know, they have their Muslim heritage, but they are not mad, you know, Jew-hating, Christian-hating jihadists. They want no part of it. Unfortunately, they're not the ones in control. So we'll see what happens. It's interesting.
Well, the mullahs are not stupid men in some respects. They do what the Chinese do, which is beat the drums of nationalism. And the Iranians are a proud people, the Persians are a proud people, and they look outward for reasons why they don't have clean water, and they're paying $6 a gallon for gas. Well,
yes. Well, so are we.
Yeah.
Death to America. Yeah. Oh, God. Did I just say that? Yes, I did. But you know something? It has a double meaning here. It's America with a K, not with a C. So we'll see. Actually, there was a news story that broke that really flew under the radar. Well, you know, there's a metaphor for you. A major Iranian nuclear plant was completely blown up and sabotaged from within because the Mossad had convinced the Iranian scientists to bring explosives. The plant was damaged, and somehow an Israeli front company posed as a construction company that sold them the building materials at the appropriate time. The building collapsed or was blown up, and then also explosives were flown in via drone or something, and they blew up the centrifuges. So it set them back, like, I don't know, several years, which is a good thing, because they were about to enrich uranium almost to 90% level, which is bomb material.
Well, don't worry. The Germans and the French will sell them new centrifuges.
I'm sure they will. Our wonderful French Franco-German allies. God bless them. Ugh, gewalt. What do you think about this guy, Eric Zemmour, speaking of France?
I like him. He understands that pride and culture is a very important thing. Whether he's going to win, I don't know. I doubt it. I don't think that he has much of a chance, simply because of the way that that France runs its elections. But I like what he has to say. There are accusations that he's an anti-Semite, which is interesting because he is in fact Jewish.
Of course.
I think minimizing his Jewishness is smart, and minimizing the importance of minorities within France is also smart. He's trying to create an attitude among the French that we are all French, and that we need to look at the glory that is France for our motivation to continue. And fixating on small minorities, and you know, let's be honest, the Jews are a small minority in France, but fixating on them or any other minority is not a good idea if you want to recreate France of 100, 200, 300 years ago.
This is the sort of trap that I think people fall into, and it's a very convenient weapon with which the left beats up the nationalist movement, and believe me, I don't think nationalism is a dirty word, but that beat up nationalist movements in France and over here. It's not that we don't want immigrants, or we don't want people to subsume or subvert their heritage. No, it's just that when you come to a country, you have to embrace that country's heritage and its history and its customs and its language and its values, because you want to become a citizen in that country. That doesn't mean you don't observe your religion, or you don't speak your own language, or you don't have your own customs, but it's in the light of you're coming here because we, let's say America, we're giving you the freedom where you may be repressed in another country to live your life as you want to live your life. But that doesn't mean, it doesn't negate who you are. It's just that you have to positively be allied to what this country is and what its values are and what its culture is. And you become an American. Not necessarily a hyphenated American, because I hate that garbage, but you become an American. And we're not teaching that. In fact, we're far from it. We're anyone who even brings that up, brings these issues up, is labeled xenophobic, racist, and what have you. And in France, that was also a pitfall, is that it's a shame that someone like Marine Le Pen, and unfortunately her father, was it Jean-Marie Le Pen? He was a vicious anti-Semite, and he's sort of in that old vein that you can't be Jewish and you can't be French at the same time, which is ridiculous. Same thing in the madness of Nazi Germany. But I think she's toned that down. And I understand that he was quoting, I believe it was Charles de Gaulle, a very famous speech, which is why Eric Zemmour all of a sudden became a lightning rod, where it says, look, if you don't speak our language, if you're just speaking your own language, you bring in your own customs, your own holidays, and you ignore us, then we lose our own country. What is it to be French anymore, or France anymore? And he's 100% right. So there's a way of trying to elevate that message while at the same time saying it doesn't mean that we're anti-immigrant or anti-Jewish, just that we want you, when you come here, to embrace being French. I mean, look at Paris. You have all these, excuse my French pronunciation, the banlieues, or their slums, or wherever, or these no-go zones where you have immigrants from Africa, and especially the Muslim countries, where you dare not go in there because it's essentially its own country. And if you go in there, you could very well be killed. And so this is what's going on, and of course
we have that in the United States now. I mean, one of the
absolutely
these chiefs in LA or maybe a detective, high-ranking detective, said, hey, don't come here. We can't protect you.
Yeah, at that point, I mean, and then plus the fact that you have the birth rate of, and again, I hate to bring in racial politics here, but you have the birth rate of whites going way, way down, Caucasians going way, way down, and you have the birth rates of immigrants and the mass of illegal immigrants coming in, and you know, especially going through the roof, and Muslim immigrants and so on and so forth, and soon, yeah, there won't be an America, there won't be a France. And of course, they say, oh, you're just saying that because it's inevitable, it's inevitable history. Well, it isn't. When we opened our borders 50 years ago and we let in 40 million people, well, what do you think is going to happen? Plus, I mean, when we decide to abort our children or we decide to not have children and do our own thing and have, and you know, have careers or this or that, and or it, believe the environmentalists who say that having children kills the earth, that children are an infection. I think it's the current, who is it, this woman who's the eco-terrorist, who's now at the head of the Bureau of Land Management. She believes that bile. So all of these things have destroyed, are eating away at our culture. And when we lose that, we lose the, along with the education system, which is a brainwashing factory, we lose the nature of who we are and what we are, and then within a generation, as Reagan put it, we're gone. We're no longer, we're just a country. We're just a land mass with a mass of people who don't know who the hell they are and who are being told who the hell they are.
This is a full-throated defense of Western culture. That's what you are
doing.
And there's nothing surprising about that. Western culture is the best culture. I think that I would be called a racist and a fascist and all the other wonderful terms. I don't really care. If you look at the accomplishments of the world, how many of them came from non-Western cultures? And well, the answer is very few of them.
Well, Al Sharpton will argue that because he claims that that math and science and everything came from Central Africa or something like that, and it was the Greek homos, quote unquote, who stole it from the Africans. And but unfortunately, he gets an audience for that. So what are you going to do?
The thing is that Western culture is not something that is racial. It is not something genetic.
No.
It can be inculcated in people. You look around at the PhDs in physics in the United States and the biochemists and the great engineers. You know, they're not all from Minnesota. These are people from all over the world, but they are the ones who came to the United States, embraced American exceptionalism, and ran with it. And some of them are wearing turbans. Some of them have unpronounceable names, but they're all American, which makes me very, very happy.
Absolutely. Except for the ones who come from China and are funded by the Red Chinese, who are stealing,
well, they're stealing our stuff.
Stealing our technology, and, you know, with the help of the Clintons and L'Oreal Space Industries. But I better not say that because Hillary will cry when she reads her 2016 inaugural speech.
Oh,
did you
God.
See that? Oh,
oh,
my God. It was,
oh, my God.
It was horrific. I mean, it was both horrific to see, laughable, and pitiful at the same time. I guess, look, when the donations to the Clinton Foundation are approaching that of COVID Omicron deaths, meaning zero, you got to get in front of the cameras, right?
Somebody on Ace of Spades pointed out today that she didn't cry when Americans were murdered in that coup.
In Benghazi?
In Benghazi.
Yeah.
She didn't cry when many, many bad things happened, but she did cry
Chris Stevens
revisiting her failed presidential bid.
Christopher Stevens and Doherty and the other two fellows who, you know, she sat there in that room just watching as they got killed. And, you know, and then John McCain was in on that. I mean, it's basically running guns from one terrorist group to the other terrorist group in Syria. While Americans were slaughtered. Thank you, Mrs. Clinton. Thank you, John McCain.
Yes.
Before we came on the air, we were talking about, with all the craziness that's going on, the one thing I don't want to lose sight of is America, if whatever is going on, if you really want proof that this country no longer exists, look no further than the fact that we have scores of individuals who are locked up in Washington, D.C., in what I call the Garland Archipelago, for doing no more than showing up on January 6th to protest an election that they felt was stolen. And they are the victims of a plot, really, a Reichstag fire incident that locked them up and saw several people murdered, including Ashley Babbitt and Roseanne Boyland, who was beaten to death savagely in the Capitol tunnel. I mean, no matter what they're trying to say. And finally, Louis Gohmert and Marjorie Taylor Greene, Paul Gosar, and I think Matt Gaetz finally got a chance to go into the prison to see the conditions. And it was sort of like, it was kind of like a Potemkin village in a way. They had hastily painted some of the walls and cleaned it up. But from the description of some of the inmates there, who are really political prisoners, they say it's, you know, rat-infested, roach-infested. They were abused by the guards, abused by some of the actual criminal inmates of the jail. And they're literally, they haven't even been charged. And they've been incarcerated for 11 months now for no reason other than they are political enemies of this junta.
And their treatment in jail is vile beyond belief. If you read descriptions of their treatment, it sounds like some Peruvian hellhole or a Central African prison. I have a quotation up here. They have been beaten by the guards. They are called white supremacists. They are denied religious services, haircuts, shaving, the ability to trim their fingernails. They're denied time with their attorneys. They are denied the ability to even see their families and have their families visit there. They are denied bail and being held there without bail. That was Marjorie Taylor Greene. And it's much worse than that. I'm just reading I just pulled up a random article.
Listening to you recite that litany that she was saying, if you didn't know better, if you didn't know where it was taking place, you'd say it was Evin Prison in Tehran. And it was the current goon president who murdered 30,000 dissidents in Iran during the revolution 40 years ago, doing this to current people being locked up protesting the mullahs. But it's not. It's people who were locked up protesting this election. This is America. This is not America.
Now, I'm curious, who made the decision to treat them this way? It has to come from the highest levels, head of the FBI, DOJ.
The only reason they are there is because, well, they were initially arrested before the inauguration, so they're in there. I mean, it was William Barr who was the Attorney General until January 20th.
I'm not sure how many of them were arrested before the inauguration.
No, they might have been arrested afterwards.
I think that the witch hunt began soon after the inauguration.
You may be right. So I have issues with William Barr, the Bonnie Bagpiper. But this is not him. I can't really nail this on him. But no, it's got to be, you know, it's the head of the DOJ. It's Merrick Garland. It's his boss is whoever his boss is. It ain't Biden. He's a freaking, basically he has the intellectual agility of a clam that's huffing whippets. You know,
we talk about this all the time. Who's actually running this country?
No idea.
I'm not sure that anybody is. I'm not sure that there is one person manipulating everything from behind the scenes. I think that they have their marching orders, and they've had their marching orders since they were kids. These are socialists, these are crypto communists, these are the hard left of America, and they are finally in power. They know what to do.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, again,
the idea that there is some grand plan behind the scenes, I'm not so sure about that.
And that's
they've known what to do for a long, long time.
And that's even scarier because, you know, as someone once said, it's the left hand doesn't know what the far left hand is doing. So, I mean, my God. But the fact of the matter is, these people are in jail. Someone gave the orders. Someone is telling them. I mean, the fact of the matter is, this is the first time that Gohmert and Gosar and Green, the four Gs, got in there to see them. I mean, they've tried twice before to get in, and they were denied. Four congressmen. Four congressmen who are doing their due diligence, you know, for not only their constituents, but investigating supposedly this great insurrection that happened on January 6th, are denied permission to go interview people in a jail. This is not America. This is totally a totalitarian fascist banana republic. And that's giving a bad name to totalitarian fascist banana republics. Horrible. Absolutely horrible.
Oh.
Beyond belief. Anyway, I think we're just about out of time, so we're going to wrap it up here. This is the Cut Jib News podcast, episode number 4, JJ Sefton, CBD. We will see you next time. Thanks for listening.
Thank you very much.
Ciao. Bye.